Hello, yes, thank you for the invitation. Thanks to the organizers. I'm happy to be here. It's a really nice place. And I will go over a couple of aspects of storage ring EDM experiments, like Yong-Im did. So this is the outline. I have a brief introduction. I can be brief there because this is a theorist meeting, so most of you know. We made some progress towards these experiments, and we have an idea for our first direct measurement, and I have a short summary. So people have talked here about the baryon asymmetry in the universe. The observation for that parameter eta, which is n baryon minus n antibaryon divided by the number of relic photons from the best-fit cosmological model, is about 6 times 10 to the minus 10. There are various calculations of what one would expect from the standard model. This number is about 10 to minus 18. This one in particular is from Bärenreuther from 2002, which means there is a discrepancy of about 8 orders in magnitude, which this standard cosmological model gets wrong for the matter over antimatter asymmetry. And that is actually the motivation to search for physics beyond the standard model, and electric dipole moments could provide that missing cornerstone to shed some light into this. The community to look at electric dipole moments is rather large. I mean, a couple years ago, Phil Harris and Klaus Kirch estimated that worldwide there's about 500 people working in various directions in electric dipole moment searches. Neutrons, solids, atoms, molecules. And so the question is, one can actually ask the question, well, if there are so many people doing that, what are the prospects of charged particle EDM? So why would you want to do that? And now here's the couple of arguments. First of all, there is no direct measurement of charged hadronic electric dipole moment up to now. We believe that we potentially have a higher sensitivity than the one for neutrons, because we have a longer lifetime. We can actually produce more polarized protons or deuterons than neutrons. And in addition, in a storage ring, you can apply larger electric fields. That is not to say that neutrons don't have their importance. Actually, the approach is rather complementary. And at the end of the day, once somebody measures a non-vanishing electric dipole moment, it is anyway not sufficient to identify the CP violating source from a single particle, proton or neutron or whatever that be. There's a talk by Jordi de Vries, who actually I think it's over next day, about the theory. So the naive estimate of the scale of the nucleon EDM, this is actually from Kriplovich and Lamoureux. So you have a CP conserving and P conserving magnetic moment, which is 10 to the minus 14 e centimeter. If you have a non-zero electric dipole moment, we know there's parity violation of the order of 10 to the minus 7. We know there's CP violation, which is of the order of 10 to the minus 3. So a neutron or charged particle EDM, nucleon EDM, would start to appear at about 10 to the minus 24 e centimeter. The standard models say without the theta term, here you have to invoke this factor 10 to minus 7 again in order to come to a flavor neutral thing. And so the standard model background one would expect at about 10 to minus 31, which means to search for beyond standard model physics is kind of in the region between 10 to minus 24 to 10 to minus 31 e centimeter. That's a table of what we currently know about EDMs. I think it's rather up to date. I even included today this new paper on the mercury. Well, the situation is such that there are really no direct electric dipole moment measurements. So there's no direct measurement of the electron. That limit is obtained from the thorium oxide molecule. There's no direct measurement of the proton. The limit is actually obtained from mercury. And on the deuteron, there's up to now no measurement at all. So I'm kind of talking for electric dipole moment measurements of charged particles. Well, look at the experimental requirements. This is similar to what people have shown before. So You have beam intensity, you need high polarization, you need large electric fields, the spin coherence time, an efficient polarimeter. This all boils down to a simple formula. If you put the numbers in, which are really not excessive for protons, rather conservative, this is essentially feasible, then you have a statistical error of about 10 to minus 29 E centimeter per year. Of course, it's the experimentalist's goal to provide a systematic error on the same level. That's the difficult part, but 10 to minus 29 is actually, it's already quite a number. So that's why we claim that protons really have a high potential and deuterons as well. So let's see, I can be brief here. Particles with magnetic and electric dipole moment, you have seen this picture before. EDMs violate both P and T symmetry. So if you go to the rest frame of the particle, yeah, your spin vector precesses in the magnetic and electric field. This then leads to, if you solve this, leads to a so-called Thomas BMT equation, which historically actually ignored the EDM, and it was, I think, only in 2012 when Alexander Zelenko and a person from Japan whose name I don't know actually formulated the generalized BMT equation, including electric dipole moments. So then you get here this precession equation with omega MDM and omega EDM, where the mu and the d are the electric, magnetic and electric dipole moments, defined via dimensionless quantities, the small g and the eta EDM. Okay, so one can decompose this. I can be really brief because Yong Im also talked about this. This means if you want a frozen spin situation, which means you want your magnetic dipole moment rotation and the cyclotron precession to cancel, which you can do in the absence of magnetic fields. So you can kind of kill these two fields. And then this is, of course, not only possible. That means you only want to set this piece to zero. That's only possible for a positive G factor, say for protons and for electrons. You can do that purely electrical. Yeah, and that leads to that number that has already been shown before. Now, the principle also was briefly described. So basically, you put your particles in a ring. Yeah, you align them along the direction of motion, the spins. And then you simply search for a vertical development of polarization, which comes from this coupling of electric to magnetic field, where the electric field is actually the one that keeps the particle on the orbit. Yeah, so that is the method to search for charged particle EDMs, is actually using the frozen spin, and the buildup is a vertical, or the signal for the EDM is a vertical polarization that develops as function of time. Now, for any sign of G, you can come to a condition for the magic momentum which involves magnetic fields, which means you have to add a vertical magnetic field into your ring, and then you can actually allow particles with negative G factors to be also accommodated. So that is depicted here. So that black line is for protons purely electric, yeah, B is zero. For deuterons and for helions, you have to invoke some magnetic field in order to get to the magic momentum. And the whole thing actually, the whole calculation is done for a radius of 25 meters using larger electric fields than Yong Im was talking about, which means for a radius of 25 meters, you actually have the possibility to have a single machine with and without magnetic field to really measure proton, deuteron, helion EDMs in one and the same machine. Okay, second item, progress towards storage ring experiments. This is the cooler synchrotron COSY, which has been previously used for hadron physics, spin physics experiments. And it's a real good starting point for storage ring related research and development. And we want to use it for first direct measurement of the deuteron EDM. This is a bit tutorial because I will talk about spin tune and spin closed orbit. So let's say you have a particle in a storage ring, its spin points in some direction. It makes exactly one turn in the machine and then its spin points in some other direction. The axis about which the spin precesses is called the stable spin axis, which in general is a function of the position in the machine. And the angle about of the precession is called the spin tune. just recall number of spin precessions actually is per turn is called the spin tune. This will come later. Why is spin coherence time so important for these storage ring experiments? Say most experiments that you know, if you have done the polarization experiment, we don't really care about whether the ensemble is coherent along the direction stable spin axis or not. Say you have a situation like this, everything is nicely coherent. After some time, the particles decohere, but the polarization projection on the closed orbit is actually not affected. So the problem is that in the frozen spin situation, we actually have all the spins perpendicular to the closed orbit, which means we have such a situation here, not this one, but really in the horizontal plane. And if these get out of phase, your longitudinal polarization is simply gone. So your signal is gone, which means that in a machine with a frozen spin, the time you can look at that buildup of a vertical component is limited by the spin coherence time. So as Yong Im said, 5 years ago, people were doing these calculations, machine physicists, and I remember well that Alfredo Luzio calculated this for COSY, and the spin coherence time he predicted was like in the millisecond range. So not really, a sane person wouldn't really start the development that I will show you. How do we measure that? Okay, we have a storage ring, we put vertically polarized deuterons in, we make a 90 degree flip with an RF solenoid in a short time, and then we leave the spins idly precessing in the horizontal plane and measure on a polarimeter the up-down asymmetry, which is proportional to the polarization in the horizontal plane. This is the detector system, the ADA detector, which has been used for PP elastic spin correlation measurements. These are the parameters. This is the spin-dependent cross-section. The revolution frequency is about 780 kilohertz, and that spin precession frequency in here is about 120 kilohertz. So the spins are precessing with a frequency of 120 kilohertz. If you don't do too much, one could already see, this was in 2012, that one can reach spin coherence times of tens of seconds without problems. In 2013, we had actually understood that it's the 6-2 poles and how to run them properly so that one can actually increase that. There we had like spin coherence times of about 400 seconds. And this is from a recent FISREF letter that we have published. We are currently measuring spin coherence times, I mean, consistently of the order of 1,000 seconds. I have actually seen a measurement where that was actually 2,000 seconds for cycles of that length. So it's not an extrapolation, it's really the measurement during that time. So compare this to the neutron spin coherence time, which we heard is like of the order of 150 seconds. Actually, the world record before we started doing this was from Webb, where actually the spin coherence time was about half a second, 10 to 7 spin revolutions. I mean, this is really, for us, this is beyond anybody's expectation. And remember, this is 10 to 9 particles stored in that machine that do this for 1,000 seconds, all dancing to the same frequency. It's actually very important to improve that number, because in that statistical formula that I have shown, the statistical error of the measurement is directly proportional to 1 over the spin coherence time. So if you win here a factor 10, your potential limit, statistical limit, goes down by a factor 10. So it's really crucial to make long spin coherence times. There's a second thing, the spin tune, which is a byproduct of our investigation. So we basically only looked at this during the measurements. We have a precise timestamping of events implemented so that we can really keep track of each event and precisely the timing when the event occurs in the detector. And we can actually measure the phase of the polarization vector as function of time. Yeah, that means you basically analyze the data with the fixed spin tune, and then you can determine that delta nu s, which is that little addition, by simply taking the derivative of the phase versus the turn number. And the point is that we actually can determine that spin tune to one part in 10 to the 10 over 100 second time, over about 100 seconds, which is a fantastic way to actually provide a precision tool for accelerator physics and to study systematic effects in the storage ring. This shows what happens if you look for a subsequent cycle. So this now shows this spin tune change for subsequent cycles for different polarizations. It looks arbitrary. It actually is arbitrary. We have no idea where this comes from, but this is how it is. You now have a tool to actually tune your machine with much better precision than before. So one can study the long-term stability of the accelerator. We actually have in place a feedback system with which we can stabilize the phase of the spin precession in the machine relative to the phase of some RF device so that we can actually phase lock any RF with respect to the spin precession, which is very important for systematic measurements. And the question, the real question is, can this be used as a precision tool and what can we learn from it? And this is the next talk by Kolya. We've been doing a couple of studies to actually look at machine imperfections. Okay, there are lots of technical challenges in this field. The main issues are listed up here, these five. We need large gradients, spin coherence time is green, polarimetry we've shown a couple years ago is green. We need high BPM resolution and we need high precision tracking, as Yong-Im also said. There's lots of other issues like magnetic shielding, alignment of ring elements. There's a talk by Peter Fierlinger dedicated on that. And of course, if you look at deuteron EDM, you cannot do that concurrently, clockwise and counterclockwise, so you have to be able to reverse magnetic fields very precisely. Last point here, very briefly, is an idea for a proof of principle experiment using a magnetic machine. Eventually one wants to have a magnetic, a new type of machine, a purely electrostatic machine, but this is not available, but one kind of has to use an existing machine to show the community that one can actually do that. And the idea here is to use an RF device, operate it on some harmonic of the spin precession frequency, phase lock it to the spin precession, and then this allows one to actually accumulate an EDM-related effect in a similar way than in such a clockwise, counterclockwise machine. So the goal mainly is to show that a storage ring, any storage ring that is suitable, can be used for such a first charged particle EDM measurement. The way this works is that you build yourself an RF Wien filter, E cross B, with a vertical magnetic field and a horizontal E field. It does not have a Lorentz force. You put the particles in the horizontal plane, the spins of the particles, and then if the electric dipole moment is non-zero, then you get a slow increase of polarization due to a non-vanishing electric dipole moment. The statistical sensitivity is really large. 10 to minus 23 to 10 to minus 24 is not an issue. Of course, systematic effects are difficult, and we know that with this technique we will not go more than about 10 to minus 20 or 10 to minus 19. But for charged particles, this is where we need a starting point, and that's what we are going to do. So this shows a model calculation. So you have basically spin in the horizontal plane, Px, Py is alternating, and the spin is also precessing in the vertical plane. If you wouldn't have a Wien filter, then this oscillation would be constant in time. That's due to the EDM, as Yong-Im said. It's just the oscillation with a spin tune. But if you have this RF Wien filter on, you can make this, you can achieve that there is a slow increase in polarization as function of time. So they have two papers about this. This works fine. This is the device. It's about a meter long. It's really designed to the best that is possible. I'm almost there. It's a waveguide design. We are currently getting all the components out of the workshop. We have a few problems with the ferrets, but we will start to assemble it. We started to assemble it. So this is my summary. Well, EDM searches provide a new window to disentangle sources of CP violation, possibly explain the matter-antimatter asymmetry in the universe. We are working on the spin physics toolbox that we need for these studies, which have up to now brought us to very long spin coherence times in a magnetic machine. If you go to a dedicated EDM machine where you essentially have no electric, no magnetic fields, the spin coherence time can be expected to be even longer because coupling to the magnetic fields is suppressed. Yeah, I have shown you that the spin tune emerges as a high precision, novel precision tool for accelerator physics. We are doing high precision spin tracking tools, which we need, that are also capable to trace particles through RF structures, which is non-trivial. Development of electrostatic deflectors, also E cross B deflectors and high precision beam position monitors. The near future for us is start the first direct measurement somewhere next year. Of course, the sensitivity is not in the region where you would expect the discovery, but that's a starting point. By 2019, we want to have a conceptual design for a dedicated ring together with a sensitivity of about 10 to minus 29. Well, this is done by a collaboration that's called JEDI. Jülich Electric Dipole Moment Investigations has about 100 members, 10 PhD students, and this is the website. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Almost.
Perfect. Questions? Here's one.
This is all very interesting. I'm just curious, and you have an all-electric machine, in the orbits that are going around, the particles are oscillating around their equilibrium position, and doesn't that make, therefore, a effective magnetic field in the rest frame of the particle?
Yeah, it, certainly you always have a, because of V cross E, you always have, or beta cross E, you always have a magnetic field in the rest frame of the particle. That's for sure. But they actually, the effects of these two, they cancel in the clockwise, counterclockwise. So that's why you, why we want.
You can't do clockwise and counterclockwise.
It makes it more, maybe easier. Because there you can
see the. Oh, okay.
Which one?
Depends on the version you.
Okay.
No, it's not so easily seen. And now this effect really cancels in the two beams, clockwise, counterclockwise, and that's why you have to make sure that the two beams actually orbit on the same orbit, and that means you need BPMs, high precision BPMs that measure that relative position of the two beams to very, very high accuracy. I mean, we are quoting here like 10 nanometers or so. With squid-based BPMs, you can do that. Of course, that is ideal for protons, where the particles orbit at the same time. If you go to deuterons, you have to reverse the B field, and you have subsequent fills. So that is tricky. Much more tricky, actually.
You talked about the spin coherence time, and Jungim also mentioned this. You achieve long spin coherence time. Is that purely through focusing of the longitudinal momentum? So these things don't have a very wide spread of momentum, particles in the beam?
It's mainly due to the fact that with the 6-2 poles, you make sure that the arrival times of the particles is independent of their transverse position in the beam. That it's an optics thing. You can tune it. I mean, we have a couple of 6-2-pole families at work in there, and with 3 6-2-pole families, you can optimize it.
What is the delta P over P typically?
Yeah, it's 10 to minus 4, 10 to minus 5. So the delta P, I mean, with cooled beam or pre-cooled beam, you have a very high momentum resolution. So the delta P over P typically is not less than 2 times 10 to minus 4, I would say. So it's quite monochromatic beam. But in the transverse phase space, the particles do this oscillation, and therefore you have to make sure that particles that are in phase space distributed, that their arrival is about at the same time. And then you get these high coherence times.
in accelerator and especially collider design, one does not like so much the counter-propagating beams because of the tune shifts and instabilities which can be caused by such a device, such operation mode. So there's a lot of work is going into separating the beams. And now you want to have these beams on the same orbit.
No, exactly, precisely on the same orbit. But this is only 10 to 10 particles. So we are not talking about 10 to 12 or 10 to 13 particles. So it's a really different regime compared to, say, collider experiments. I mean, the luminosities are not high, even if you could use the collisions also for polarimetry, but the luminosity is not very high.
Yeah, but for instance, for the very long spin coherence time, you rely on the fact that you cancel out the motions of the beams due to the influence of the radio frequency field, but now you get an additional component into this.
Yeah, but in the final machine, we will not have Tesla fields around. You know, I mean, we are using here magnetic fields. I mean, the bending magnets have Tesla fields. So in the final machine, we will maybe have either no magnetic field or, say, 50 millitesla or so. So I would expect that the spin coherence time in any of these final machines is even longer than the 1,000 seconds we are now seeing.
More questions? I want to say a word about proton spin coherence time, because that may be more difficult because of the larger magnetic moment.
Yeah, it has a larger G factor, so the protons precess much faster. So the G factor for protons is 1.79, and for deuterons it's -0.15. So they precess faster. But the other issue is that for deuterons, there are actually no depolarizing resonance in the vicinity up to a couple GeV. While for protons, actually, there are many depolarizing resonances. So we haven't really started to do proton spin coherence time optimization, but this is on the list. So we started with the easier case, also in view of the fact that there is no deuteron EDM limit available at all. So you try to go to a place where, well, if we can, it's not expected that one sees something at 10 to minus 20. But anyway, the development is for deuterons, and we, at a later point, we will do the proton spin coherence time.
Okay. No more questions? Thank you again.